This is Dr. Jimmy Nichols, equine nutritionist. On this podcast, we will explore unique cases, debunk popular myths, and break down advanced research data. Join me for a little fun, a lot of science, and some real-world advice for feeding horses. Welcome to episode 108. It's Dr. Jimmy. I often get asked what to do with a horse that cribs, or people will ask my thoughts on why their horse might be chewing or eating wood. So these are fairly complex situations, and rarely do they have the same cause. Horses are individuals, and the reason that one horse might begin a certain stereotypy isn't necessarily going to be the same reason that the next horse will. And in turn, what will eliminate one horse's behavior might not necessarily help the next. So I think it's important to differentiate between cribbing and wood chewing. I see some people mistake these as the same thing, but they are two very different behaviors. Wood chewing is just like it sounds. Horses are actively eating wood. Okay. They might be gnawing down on wooden fence rails, fence posts, the corner feeder in the stall that is conveniently made of wood, or, you know, they might be going just like total beaver style and eating the bark off of the trees out in their pasture. So this is number one, dangerous for the horse because of the potential to get, you know, splinters and shards of wood, you know, wedged between the teeth or lodged into the soft tissues, either of their mouth or their digestive system. And then secondly, from the facility owner standpoint, it can be costly and just super annoying to have to keep replacing and fixing the things that the horses eat, especially if they're not your own horses that are doing the damage, right? So if you happen to own a wood eater and you are boarding somewhere, or if you're renting a space for your horse, it would be real kind of you to offer to replace the things that your horse has damaged. And then, of course, I'm going to get into some of the things that you can do to prevent this behavior in the future. Okay, that is wood chewing. Now let me describe cribbing. So cribbing can look like fence chewing from a distance, but a horse that cribs is not actually trying to eat the object that his mouth is on, okay? But for anyone that has not seen a horse crib, what they do is they basically hook their incisors or their front top teeth onto something like a fence rail or a stall door or a feed bucket or, you know, whatever they can find that is handy. And then they proceed to basically contract their neck muscles and kind of lift their belly and pull backwards against the object, okay? And when they do this, they also generally make a grunting sound. Now, according to the team at UC Davis Veterinary School, a cribbing horse doesn't actually swallow or take in all that much air when they crib, which I found was interesting because another common name or another common term for cribbing that people will often use is the term wind sucking. Okay. So I thought that was interesting, I guess, for the team at UC Davis to point out that they aren't actually sucking in all that much wind and that the sound that we're hearing is more of a grunt. I also forgot to mention that the term cribbing is kind of like a word mashup between the words crib and biting, okay? So cribbing is a behavior that occurs in, it's estimated between 5 to 15% of domestic horses, okay? So this is not something that has actually been documented in true wild or feral free-ranging horses. So that tells us it is most certainly tied to the things that, you know, we as humans are subjecting the horses to in domestic life, okay? Horses that crib, The reasons that cribbing can be negative, okay? So they may develop, kind of overdevelop certain muscles in their neck. They may wear their teeth down, which can cause malalignment issues to occur in the rest of their mouth. They may suffer from TMJ or temporomandibular joint issues. They may have just kind of overall poor body condition. They may be suffering from gastric ulcers or other digestive issues. The problem is they may have, you know, They may have all of this, they may have some of this, and they may have none of this, right? Some horses are cribbers and they live a perfectly happy, healthy life, and you would never know that there were any, or you never notice any adverse effects from them actually cribbing. So the causes of cribbing, meaning, you know, why would a horse begin to crib in the first place? You know, those causes are really rooted in stress. Okay. So boredom, lack of adequate fiber or forage, not having enough space to move around, lack of companionship, or just feeling generally lonely or isolated from other horses. You know, those are all reasons that a horse would, you know, kind of typically turn to some kind of stereotypic behavior. Researchers have found that horses who crib have higher levels of the stress hormone cortisol. Okay. So they can also have higher levels of endorphins, or the feel-good hormones. So one theory is that a horse under stress will start cribbing, and each time they crib, they get a release of endorphins. And it doesn't take long and they realize that they can get a surge of these feel-good hormones anytime they want. So it soon becomes a habit that is nearly impossible to break. So again, that's one theory. I'm not saying that that's, you know, hard and set what's going on. But the bottom line is, you know, we can't be sure if the horses continue to crib because they become addicted to this endorphin release, or if they continue to crib because they are continuously trying to get away from some kind of stress or frustration in their lives. So it's kind of a chicken or egg situation. You know, is it the high cortisol levels, you know, that are indicating the level of stress and they're trying to get away from that stress? Or are they actively, you know, trying to get those endorphin dumps? We don't know that yet. I mentioned some general reasons that a horse might learn to crib, but then, you know, there's also theory that it could be related to things that we don't have control over. So, there is some indication that there could be genetic ties, certain bloodlines, different breeds may be more susceptible to it than others. It could be that it's related to gastric ulcers or pain in the GI tract. It could be related to pain somewhere else in the body, right? It's been suggested too that high concentrate or high starch diets, so basically diets that do not contain enough fiber, are also a contributing factor. So, you know, that would be if you fed large volumes of, you know, things like oats or corn or sweet feeds. It's also been theorized that trauma from weaning could actually be a cause, that would cause young horses to start cribbing. And then there could also be like neurological dysfunction in the brain. Okay. So the truth is that, you know, no one knows for sure. But what we do know is that once a horse learns to crib, it quickly does become a habit, and it is almost impossible to break that habit once it's learned. Some people believe horses can learn to crib by watching other cribbers, but so far the research is totally inconclusive on that topic. There's no scientific evidence that you should ever, you know, isolate a cribber from the other horses. It's not like you can have a cribber standing next to a non-cribber and have the non-cribber learn how to do it just by watching that. The research has not proven that that's a thing. But what we do know is, you know, if you do isolate a cribber from everyone else, you're just adding layers to their stress and their frustration, right? Because you've isolated them from the herd, you know, maybe put them in a place that they're uncomfortable with because they can't see other horses or can't be around anyone. So it might actually make their, let's call it, I don't know, quality of life, or at least the amount of cribbing that they do, it might actually increase that. So that might not be the best thing to do for a horse that does crib. One team of researchers actually took a slightly different approach as they were exploring this whole cribbing phenomenon. They hypothesized that cribbers generally have lower antioxidant capacity and that cribbing might be related to oxidative stress. So they conducted a study, which I will link to in the show notes, and they uncovered a potential link in the serum selenium status, meaning horses that crib also had lower levels of selenium circulating in their blood. So selenium is an important piece of the antioxidant system. Selenium is a trace mineral, okay? And, you know, based on the results of this study, it suggests that there could be, that selenium could potentially play a role in why horses cribbed, right? So just because of that study, I always check to make sure that, you know, a cribbing horse's diet contains adequate levels of selenium. And then I also kind of take it that next step further and I just check antioxidants, right? So vitamin E is a really important antioxidant. I make sure that both selenium and vitamin E are in plentiful levels in the diet of a horse that is a cribber. So what else can you do for a cribber? Of course, the best cure is always prevention. So if you happen to be in charge of a group of horses, especially if those are young horses, it is wise to give those horses plenty of opportunity to move around, get turnout time, socialize with other horses, and try your best not to restrict access to forage or hay. If you own a horse that does learn to crib, or if you notice a horse starting to crib for the first time, take really quick action to stop that behavior before it becomes a habit, right? So things you can do, if possible, remove all horizontal surfaces or anything that a horse could possibly hook their teeth onto, right? I get that you can't just take down your fence lines, but one thing you could do is string an electric fence around the inside of your fencing so that way they can't get up next to the fence. If there are certain things in your horse's pen, you know, maybe the side of the water trough or the, you know, side of a hay feeder or something, if there are things that you can't remove, right, one thing you can do is coat the surfaces with things that, you know, taste or smell pretty terrible so that they're less likely to want to put their mouth on it. You can also try using a cribbing collar or a muzzle. So just if you do go that route, make sure that it fits properly and that it's not rubbing or otherwise painful to the horse. And then just, you know, keep in mind too that those are not always effective, right? Cribbing collars in particular. And some researchers have actually suggested that, you know, the use of those like prevention devices may actually cause the horse to have more stress because they're not able to crib, which then causes them to crib even more when you do remove the collar. So none of this is an easy answer, right? You kind of have to play with all of it. There are also a couple surgical approaches that have been tried, and they're not considered to be consistently successful. And there's also kind of controversy or speculation that, you know, maybe those surgical procedures might cause other welfare concerns for the horse. So, you know, surgical approaches are generally not, not well accepted is probably not the right word, but they're not consistently successful. Okay. And so for that kind of money and, you know, the potential for things that could go negative there, it's, I think a lot of people just choose not to go that route. So in my opinion on cribbing, kind of three things. Number one, do everything you can to help prevent stress in your horses, especially in the first several years of life. Number two, if a horse begins cribbing, take immediate action to stop it and prevent them from developing or turning it into a habit. And then number three, if your horse already has the habit, it's kind of my opinion to just let them do it, right? I think that we cause more stress and more frustration in the horse if we try to prevent it. So as long as it is not obviously causing secondary conditions that are negative to the horse, like for example, wearing their teeth off, right? I mean, if they are being so aggressive about hooking their incisors onto something that it's actually starting to wear their incisors off in a weird pattern or a weird angle, that's something to certainly be concerned about and pay attention to. In that situation, you would definitely want like every 6 month dental exams, because what happens with the horse's incisors in the front is also going to affect the positioning of their molars in the back. Okay. And all of that then is going to have an impact on, you know, their TMJ joint. It's going to have an impact on how well they can grind their forage or their food. It's going to just, you know, it can affect a lot in their body, right? So as long as the horse, you know, kind of back to what I was saying there, I guess, is, you know, the theories or the philosophies or the, you know, mentality around cribbing has really changed a lot over, you know, the course of history with horses. You know, I was reading something that, you know, back in the 1800s, cribbing was considered an unsoundness, that was, you know, an offense that you could actually return a horse because they were unsound. And, you know, I think over time and as we've learned more, and maybe we've just become more tolerant to all of the things that our horses do. I don't know. You know, when you have an animal that is either very emotionally special to you or one who is performing at just freak crazy levels, I think you tolerate a little bit more than you might for just, you know, an average other horse that you don't have any connection to or that doesn't have, you know, extreme performance abilities. So, you know, if you've got one of those, like, I'm highly attached to them or they're just freak performers, I think in my mind, at least, I probably would be a little bit more tolerant to the cribbing. And I might, in those situations, just let them crib. Again, as long as it's not causing, you know, secondary health conditions within the horse, I think letting them crib is probably a little bit better for them than trying to prevent it or eliminate it. Okay, let me bounce back over to wood chewing. So wood chewing is almost always caused by a lack of fiber in the diet. Okay, note that I had said almost, right? I'm not saying always, but almost. It can also be tied to boredom and frustration. Okay, so either lack of lack of fiber or boredom or frustration. So horses that chew wood are generally doing so because they don't have enough fiber. So notice I didn't say not enough forage. Okay, so the reason I make this distinction is because horses in, you know, imagine a horse that's out in a big, lush, green pasture, you've gotten tons of rain, the grass has been growing like crazy, okay? Those horses may actually choose to chew on wooden fence rails, the side of the barn, wooden fence posts, you know, whatever. They have plenty of forage, but what they are lacking in is fiber, okay? So lush, green grass has very little fiber. It has a whole lot of water, and it has a lot of soluble carbohydrates, but it has very little of the non-digestible components like, you know, lignin, for example, okay? Horses need bulk in their diet, right? They need non-digestible fibers in order to keep those microbes happy in the hindgut and to keep their digestive tract just functioning properly overall, okay? If you notice your horse eating tree bark or chewing the fences, kind of the first steps that you might try are offering some dry hay to boost the fiber level in the diet. And make sure that the hay is good quality, right? I've seen plenty of horses with, let's call it, full-time access to a round bale that they absolutely hate, right? And then they take to chewing wood. You know, generally speaking, horses are wired to eat pasture grass or hay, right? They are not browsers, okay? So when I say browsers, that would be animals like elk, deer, goats, right? Those are animals that eat browse, okay? So woody plants and brushes and things like that. So if a horse is eating woody type plants, that is very out of the ordinary, and that should be a red flag that their forage in their program either might not be the best quality, maybe it tastes terrible, or maybe they just simply are not being offered enough in terms of quantity of that forage. All of that said, there are certainly horses who will exhibit wood eating, or at least let's call it wood destroying behavior, if they're bored or frustrated. Okay, so again, play on words here. Notice I said wood destroying. Okay, if they are not actually eating the wood, But instead, if they're just like ripping it apart and shredding it, okay, that's a separate situation that is probably more likely related to stress and frustration or boredom, okay? So in those cases, you should try to eliminate the stress or give the horse more to do to prevent that boredom. So maybe you can increase the amount of turnout time that that horse gets, maybe increase the number of rides per week that you put on them, or increase the amount of time of your daily rides, or increase the intensity of your rides. You can try offering hay in slow feeder nets. You can try giving them different kinds of toys to help with boredom. Some horses will actually spend a pretty decent amount of time licking salt blocks. So, you know, I like to keep a plain white salt block out at all times. I'm sure that there's, I would love, I guess, to see what you guys do, what all of you listeners do to prevent boredom for your horses. I'm going to post this episode on my social media channel. So if anybody has fun tips or tricks or pictures that they would share with us of what you do to help your horses, entertain themselves during the day, I would love to see those. Because at the end of the day, I think we have to remember that, you know, every horse is an individual, and what works for one horse might not work for another. But, you know, if we pay really close attention to our horses, and if we understand them, if we understand their normal routines and their personalities, it's not usually that hard to figure out, you know, what the certain things are that make them either really happy or really stressed. So I encourage you guys to kind of, you know, spend the time with your horse if you can, and, you know, really kind of try to think that next layer down about what might be causing stress. You know, did they lose a companion horse? Did maybe a new horse came in and is being stalled right next to them, and that stall or that horse kicks the stalls or whinnies a whole bunch? Or, you know, I mean, like there are some horses that will get frustrated or irritated by really little things. I actually have a horse that is incredibly irritated by fans. If I travel, and I normally will take a little box fan to put in the stalls in the summer when it's really hot and there's not good airflow in the stall barns, I'll take a box fan. I have a mare that will absolutely lose herself over that box fan. I don't know if she thinks that it's an alien or what, but she will not eat. She will not drink. She will not move her feet from the farthest corner away from that fan. Literally all night long, she will not move her feet because she is just completely irritated by the air blowing in her stall, and she doesn't want it to touch her. I don't know if it's that or if it's the noise or what it is, but I mean, most horses, you stick a fan in their stall and they go right up to it and they just love the wind blowing. You know, it keeps the flies off of them, it keeps them cool. Not this mare. So, you know, like I said, all horses are different. They all have unique and individual personalities, and I think it's up to us as, you know, their owners to be their advocates and figure out, you know, what's stressing them out, and, you know, what makes them happy, and just do the best that we can to try to make their lives a little bit better. Thank you for tuning in. Again, I'll be sure to post on my social media pages. So that's on both Facebook and on Instagram. You can search Dr. Jimmy Equine Nutritionist, or my handle on both pages is at Dr. Jimmy, and that's spelled DRJYME.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Feed Room Chemist. If you like what you hear, be sure to share with your friends, post to social media, or give us a review. And as Winston Churchill used to say, no hour of life is wasted that is spent in the saddle. So go saddle up.